All right, back on the record, June 3rd, 2025, 10:53 a.m. on the Silver View Appeals. We are in the appellant testimony. It's Dr. Cook. Ms. Clungeon, go ahead.
Okay, Dr. Cook, right before the break, there was some discussion about how the depth changes based on whether the soil has been plowed or disturbed. Do you recall that?
Yes, I
Okay.
do.
So I just want to clarify, how does a field or a site being plowed impact the depth or what you look at when looking for soil indicators for a wetland?
If you go back to the indicator, am I sharing my screen again?
No, not yet.
Okay, so let me share my screen again.
And this is exhibit A10, now
This
A10.
is here.
The field indicator.
No, I want to go. Yes, field indicators. If we go back to the field indicators. I want to do this first, and then I'll get into why the depth matters.
Okay.
So when the remand decision was, we were just looking at
Sorry,
the
you're.
indicator
I think
A11.
you froze a little bit. Can you repeat that?
Oh, it's well, that's weird. My is are we back on again?
Yes.
Am I frozen again? Or am I good?
You're good now, but could you just repeat the last thing you said?
Okay. Yes. So when in the last hearing, the previous hearing, Mr. Scholes stated that he disagreed with my adding the indicator A11 as one of the indicators for my justification for why the soils were hydric. But I want to point out, this is the field indicators of hydric soils. There are 18A type of indicators for all soils. Sorry. There are 22 indicators for loamy and clay soils across the US, and there are 12 indicators for sandy soils across the US. So there's a lot of things that you can look for in terms of whether or not something is a hydric soil. The color being the first indicator, if it's got a chroma of one or chroma of two with mottles, that's the first one. And then we look for all these others. So each one of these, and I'll just go to the A11 indicator description. We'll go down to page 15. So this is the A11. So the description gives a specific depth for certain features, and they depend on colors and soil texture and et cetera. So it says for the use in all areas except for specific ones, but it is one that is found in our region. The soil has a depleted or glade matrix, meaning it's usually grayish in color because the organic acids have leached out. That has 60% or more chroma of two or less. Remember, that's the right-hand side of that slash. Starting at a depth of 30 centimeters or 12 inches or less from the soil surface and having a minimum thickness of either 6 inches or 2 inches. Consisting of fragmented soil material. So they specifically say it has to happen within the top 12 inches of the soil. One of them I found it at 13 and a half inches, and the other I found it, I think, at 14 inches. So an inch and a half or 2 inches lower than that definition. But it's in a disturbed soil.
And what is
So
that?
yeah, so because of the plowing that occurred, and colors can change within a soil profile, as Mr. Scholl said, but the depth of something, unless there's a lot of organic accumulation on the surface and it starts to decompose and actually form soil below, the depth isn't going to change. So if the farmer plowed it 30 years ago, but he scraped inches off, it's going to be higher in the profile. And if he deposited as part of the plowing, because you know, if you plow, you flop some off one side and take some off another side, it'll be deeper. So that's not going to change. So they specifically state in, hold on, I got to pull up another. Got so many things open on my desktop here that it's
it's also it's showing your emails and things like that.
I know, I'm trying to get rid of all that. There we go. So for our part of the world, let's find the table that I did. For loamy sands across much of Washington, most of the indicators that we find, and these are loamy sandy soils. The indicators of that whole great list that we did, most of the ones that we find are F3, which is a depleted matrix, which means that the chroma, that's the number on the right-hand side of the slash, is less than 2, with greater or less than 2% redox concentrations or models within the upper 12 inches. The F6 is redox dark surface. The chroma is less than 3, 2 less than 1 with redox features. And there's lots of different things that redox features can be. Or A11. And there's all of these, but these are the ones that I found in the soils that I was seeing in within the wetland that I defined. So those were the ones that I looked at. So the whole thing about,
I can still see your emails.
I know. The whole thing here, I'll stop sharing. The whole thing about the conversation about problematic soils that came up previously that Ms. Hennessy was talking about was that she said that the soils were problematic because of this. It clearly had been plowed. And there was argument in the field with all of them about that, but plowing did come up. And when I said I didn't feel I needed to pull into the problematic methodology was because by the time I came out, it was very clear what was wetland and what wasn't, because the veg was in, the hydrology was present, which it also was during the October visit when Mr. Scholes and Rachel Hyland went out again. And the soils were hydrated, so I could get good colors on them, and the redox features were very obvious. So I didn't see a need to implement that problematic, but other than to re-express the idea that the A11 was a little bit deeper than was allowed by the definition, but that was because it had been disturbed. Okay, so that's why depth does matter. Because if you're going to be a strict person about meeting the definition, which Mr. Scholes was at the last hearing, it could not be below 12 inches. But the fact that it had been plowed, I gave leeway because it just makes logical sense to give leeway when a soil's been disturbed. Things can be in slightly different positions in the soil profile. And the fact that the vegetation and the hydrology were present. And again, if you've got veg and hydrology, the soils take longer to react to wetland conditions or go away from wetland conditions. But there doesn't seem to be any reason why they wouldn't be there. And so with that in mind, I'd like to bring you to that F18 effort that Mr. Scholes talked about that he went out in October. So I will share my screen again because I've got F18 up.
So when you share the screen, it sometimes gives you an option of share a screen or share a specific.
Yes, I got it this time. Yeah, sorry. That's my bad. So so here's the figure of the extra data
it's
plots that they did. Sorry?
Oh, you're not sharing yet.
Oh, that's weird. It says to me that I am. Is it now?
I don't see it. I can bring it up. Oh, wait. There we go.
Okay.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah, sorry. Sometimes there's a little lag. Yeah. All right. Okay. So here's the figure. Here's the new data plots that they did. So here's my DP16 which they say is their DP26, but again, we've already discussed the vegetation is different, the soils are different. So I think they sampled on the uphill side of my point, and I sampled in the wetland. But then they added extra data points, which is DP25, DP28, DP27, and I think 23 and 24 were already there. Because I didn't see them in their data sheets. So basically, we're talking about 25, 26, 27, and 28. And again, they'd already done 26. So if we go down to their data points, like we did before, so here's DP 25. So in DP 25, and let me shrink this down a little bit so you get the whole screen. They say that both the vegetation and the hydrology were present. Well, they were out in October and the rains had started, so that shallow aquifer has now risen. And so, again, for the whole area that I identified as wetland, the aquifer is up. So the hydrology criteria is met. It wasn't in July because it goes down because it hasn't rained for a while. But again, you need to remember that you only need to have hydrology for 2 weeks during the growing season from February to the end of September or beginning of October. So the hydrology was met while they were there. So they said that the soils were not met. And we're not even going to talk about the veg because they said it was in. So we're going down again, 0 to 7 inches. Chroma of 2 to 2, no rhabdoxamorphic features. But from 7 to 12 inches, again, within that top 10 inches of the soil, it's a chroma of 2, and it has the rhabdoxamorphic features. It says faint redox, but they're there. And again, as I said, I highly doubt it was greater than 99 because, again, our eye can't discern kind of below 4-3% models. So they were present. So
So, in
this
your
is a
opinion,
high.
looking at this data sheet, you would conclude that this was a wetland.
Yes, I would. I'd say all three criteria were met: vegetation, soils, and hydrology.
Okay.
So,
And any of
okay.
the other points?
So this is DP25. If you go down to DP26, which is the one that was supposed to correspond with my data point, I do agree that their soils are not in because the rhodoxomorphic features are below 12 inches. It is a chroma of 2. But again, I think they sampled outside of my wetland boundary because right there, that was the wetland boundary. So I don't think their DP26 was wetland. DP27, again, they said the veg and the hydrology were in. So then we go down to look at their soils. And within 6 to 12 inches, they found rhodoxomorphic features. So, and it had a chroma of 2. So again, that's also a wetland soil. So I think that they said it wasn't in, but it is a wetland soil. All right, then we go down to DP28. Again, vegetation and hydrology are present on the, they said that the soils were not hydric. We go down within 8 to 12.5 inches. It is a chroma of 2 with also, again, the models. So I think this is also a hydric soil. So I think that all these extra points that Mr. Scholes and Rachel did, or maybe just Rachel did them. I can't remember. I think he said just Rachel did them. I think they're hydric. So I think all three criteria met, and I think it was wetland. So, you know, I'm not sure why they're contending it wasn't. And then when you look at the photos, if you look at the photo for wetland 25, the soil on the surface is quite dark. And you go down to 25, 26, which is the one that I didn't think was in. Look how much lighter it is. And I would agree that looks like an upland soil. You go down to 27, a little bit darker, at least towards the surface. Not as dark, and 28 is definitely much darker. Not that bright orange that we found in 26. So I think that the soils even look hydric. So, and this is the area where they sampled. 26 is in a very different kind of area than 27, 24. This is, it looks like it's a little depression. This looks, the 26, which I agree is from their data is out, is looks like it's a little higher in elevation and a completely different vegetation. So it makes sense just from looking at the photo, which ones would be wetland and which ones would be upland. All right. So that's what I think about. And I believe, well, we'll have to look again at the what Mr. Let's see. I have to get over to the Radke report here. Here we go. It's right here. So I don't believe I'm sharing the screen yet.
You are.
Right. So, oh, I am. So this, the Radke report is up.
Yes. And this is exhibit. Second. Just for the record. I believe it's exhibit F13. Let me just check.
I have the list here. 13, yes, it's 13.
Okay.
So this is the Radke report. I highlighted these because this is them describing what they were tasked to do. The first is the applicant shall dig test pits. This is what Mr. Obrecht told them that needed to happen. So they were reviewing what the applicant had done, i.e. SVC and Mr. Skoll. So, and that peer review shall be conducted by a qualified consultant hired by the county. So they said, in response to the appeal hearing, Soundview collected additional data to determine if the A11 indicator was present by excavating four additional sample plots in the vicinity of the Cook Scientific sample plot locations as shown in figure one. Radke and Associates visited the site in July to confirm the findings of Soundview consultants. Specifically, our review focused on determining if the hydric soil indicator A11 was met at these locations, as this was the indicator discussed in the hearing examiner's reconsideration. That's all they did. That's all they were tasked to do, to see if A11 was present in those. All right. So already they had a very limited task. But in the data plots 15, 17, and 18, again, and these are for the southwest corner. They said that my plots did not meet the, oh no, actually those are my data plots. I take it 2, 4, and 5 that I didn't meet the hydric criteria for A11, but they didn't discuss anything about color or F3 or F6 indicators because they were only tasked to look at A11. That's all they were tasked to do. So A11, they felt that A11 wasn't met. But again, if you look at their data plots, and I'll go down through that, in a completely different location. The vegetation doesn't match mine at all and doesn't also doesn't match those of the SVC data plots. So in they took plots in yet again a third location for each of the five data plots. Data plot 16, these were for the they did find that for my data plot 16, it did meet the A11 indicator because the soil profile consisted of up to 10 inches of very dark gray, 3-1 loam over dark grayish brown. That could have been, it was at, you know, at proper grade because that area wasn't plowed to the extent that some of the rest were. But it was the same type of soil. The indicator that I found in the other two locations, they said it wasn't met within, there's no depleted layer equal to or less than 12 inches. And at 16, they found it below the 12. So again, they were looking not for, they were looking for the absolute definition of A11 and not what could have happened as a result of a plowing.
And just to clarify, is looking for only one indicator, is that best practice when doing
No.
a wetland delineation?
No, but that's all they were tasked to do as the third party reviewer from the county. That's
Okay.
all they were asked to do. And they specifically stated that's all that they did. They only looked for the A11 indicator. So they didn't discuss anything else. That's all they were tasked to do. And that's what
And,
they did.
But just to clarify, there are other soil indicators that they could have found that
color
could have shown that it was hydric soil.
Yes, color.
Okay.
If they had just compared mine and SVC's, but they went out and they looked at soils too. And again, where they sampled, which was in the vicinity of mine. Sorry. Oh, sounds like somebody was breaking up. In the vicinity of mine, different veg, different locations. So, you know, so they specifically said that they excavated sample plots adjacent to the Soundview data plots 13 and 14 located south of data plot 9 in the southwest corner of the project site. So now we're down in the southwest corner. These additional plots were requested as part of the hearing examiner's finding regarding Dr. Cook's testimony. We confirm that Soundview's data findings that wetland conditions were not present in the southwest corner based on the sample plots we excavated adjacent to the Soundview data plots 13 and 14. Hydric soils were not present, therefore, were not present. Therefore, all three wetland parameters were not present in the southwest corner. But again, they sampled adjacent to, not in the same. And if you, I should have set up a table comparing the vegetation between their data plots and the SVC. But so this is for their sample plot one. They did not give a map of where these are, but they kind of say they're in the vicinity of. But if you, again, if you compare the vegetation, and if you want me to do it, I can get table one from the SVC report and this and do them side by side and do a comparison. But if you can do that yourself, you can see that the vegetation communities are completely different and the soils are described are different. So completely different soil profile description. So they sampled in yet a third place. So I contend that there was no comparison of my data points, which is what the remand was, you know, going back out and looking at my locations and seeing if there was wetland there. And that when Mr. Scholes or Rachel Hyland went out and they looked at areas that would have been within my wetland, that they were all wetland. That's because the vegetation and the soils were there. Our vegetation and the hydrology was present, and they said the soils weren't, but just on the basis of color alone, the soils met the criteria. So I'm really not sure what's going on here. It seems like there's an exerted effort to try to prove there's not wetlands, but I know what I found. I know what my data showed. I found a much larger wetland than they have been willing to describe. And so that's just, you know, and I think the data shows it. If you go over the Radke's supposed comparison, it's not a comparison because it's not in the same location. And they did find wetland where SVC said that hadn't been wetland.
Okay, and just to clarify, what, in your opinion, what should they have done in order to compare, or what should they have gone out and done in order to delineate the wetlands that would have been consistent with your findings?
Had they gotten my GPS absolute locations, they could have gotten themselves within a foot or two of my plots, and then they could have looked for very similar veg, because at least in two of those plots, the veg would not have changed just because of the nature of the species that are in them. The reed canary grass would still be reed canary grass, et cetera. And then they could have looked at the soils in those areas, and applied the color criteria for determining hydric soil, which is if it's a chromo of one, it's a wetland soil. If it's a chromo of two and it has reduxomorphic features, it's a wetland soil. And and then look for any other indicators that they wanted to. Those are in addition to, they strengthen your argument. But even Radke said that they agreed with at least one of my data plots, and I didn't do any data plots in the southwest corner. And because I was running out of time, because I had been there all day, and I needed to leave. But I know what I found in the blackberries right along the southern boundary. It was very, very black organic soils, and the vegetation met the criteria, and the hydrology was there. And there was wetland on the other side, adjacent to the best driveway. So, and they didn't sample far enough south. I'm not sure why. I understand that the remand to look within the blackberries was problematic because it has now been overtaken by roses. But the idea was, and I had stated in all three of the previous hearings, that it was right along the southern boundary. And even their data point 14, which is the closest to the southern boundary, I contend, and so did Radke, that that was wetland. Or I guess Radke said it wasn't. It didn't meet the A11. It didn't meet the A11 criteria, but we weren't looking for A11 at that point. So I'm not really sure why this has been an issue, and I know why they're fighting so hard, because they're going to lose some of their parking. But there is a much larger wetland in that meadow than they're willing to identify. I'm not saying it's the 88,000 plus square feet one that I found, because again, over since 2020 when I went out, it could be drier, could be slightly smaller, but it's certainly larger than 500 square feet. And that extra 200 was a give, according to Mr. Scholes, so that they would, it was a compromise. But I'm not really sure how going from 8,000 to 500 is a compromise. They're not describing what they're finding. They're not identifying hydric soils when they find them, and they're not willing to explain why they're finding vegetation and hydrology, why you wouldn't find soils. But again, it's because meadow wetlands, especially ones that have been plowed, are very difficult to identify. And then, this also comes down to the whole point of the mitigation that they've offered. Now, I understand that the county's saying that because the wetland is so small, they're not required to offer mitigation, and that they're doing it in out of the goodness of their heart. But if you have a 300 to 500 square foot divot, so think about it, that's 10 times 50 feet, or 20 times 30, less than 30 feet, 25 feet. That's tiny. It's a little divot in a paved parking lot. It's going to be the lowest point in that whole paved parking lot. So any overflow from the parking is going to end up in it. If they put a ring around it so that the water from the parking lot doesn't go in, and it just receives roof runoff, which is what they're saying. How do you, without having an above ground storage tank for the roof runoff, how do you then drain the wetland if during a high volume storm event there's a lot of water that will all end up in this ponded wetland? There's no way to drain it because the parking lot is up, and you can't put in a pump because you have to put in something that is good in perpetuity. And you can't do a pump because there's not going to be anybody there to maintain it when it breaks or change out filters or whatever. So, and what's more, they're planting it with shrubs, not meadow species. So it's not in-kind mitigation. So I'm not, I don't understand their whole mitigation plan and the fact that there is absolutely no way for a wetland that size to maintain a hydrologic the hydrology that would maintain any kind of wetland plants other than maybe pond lilies and cattails. I think that's what they're going to end up with, because a 500 square foot divot surrounded by asphalt is really only going to have cattails and pond lilies in it. So their mitigation plan also is not going to compensate. And I would also mention that even though the county won't hold jurisdiction over requiring mitigation because it's below their threshold, the Corps and the Department of Ecology require mitigation for a tablespoonful of wetland fill. So the state and the feds, regardless of whether they have staffing or not, in theory would require this mitigation. So it's not just out of the goodness of the hearts of the developer to put in this 500 square foot pond, because that's what it's going to be. It's the feds and the state would require mitigation.
Sir Examiner, I don't know if there's more questioning along this line. I've been pretty quiet as we've talked about a lot of stuff that feels like it was conclusions.
Sorry, I can't hear you. Mr. Schutz,
you faded out there.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. I probably should have chimed in before, you know, that long answer. I've been pretty quiet as we've talked, as you know, there's been a lot of discussion about essentially conclusions that were decided in the last hearing and that are not at issue in this remand. I know the examiner was concerned about the two hearing rule. The mitigation for the wetland was something that was decided. It was not an issue on remand. Essentially we're relitigating things that were decided, which the examiner determined in the decision were, you know, essentially couldn't happen because of the two hearing rule and because of the collateral estoppel issue. I apologize that it was after her long answer on this. But if there's more questions on mitigation, I'm lodging my objection now.
Okay. Ms. Clunchan, are you still going to ask about mitigation or?
Well, I was, and I mean, I believe there was still some concern even in the decision regarding the mitigation for the wetland. But also, we have now a changed wetland where we have this alternative and additional space and things like that. So I think the extent to which the function of that now new shaped wetland is still at issue.
But I mean, would the mitigation change as a result of that change in space, or?
I mean, change in space would require additional mitigation.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. I'll overrule.
Okay. All right. So just to wrap that up, Dr. Cook, for the smaller wetland that the applicant has delineated, even now it might be slightly expanded, in your opinion, will that provide similar or adequate function or mitigation for the wetland?
No, because it's out of kind, and although they will have to do a new planting plan because they're almost doubling the size of what they were going to do before, but you're still going to have the problem with the hydrology. So if you mitigate for something and it doesn't exist because it becomes a pond, it's not a wetland, then you're not mitigating. And that's the point I've been trying to make all along. It's going to be really difficult, if not impossible, to do something given the landscape setting and how they're planning on piping in the hydrology to the area to get anything that will be viable.
Mm-hmm. And why is the in-kind, why should the mitigation be in-kind? Why is that important?
We're required by mitigation sequencing, which is under RCW 9048, it's state law, to go through mitigation sequencing, which is in-kind, on-site, out-of-kind, on-site, in-kind, off-site, out-of-kind, off-site. So that's the sequence. And so to the best of your ability, you need to do in-kind, meaning the same vegetation community, the same type of wetland on the same property and within the same drainage and subdrainage. And so they're doing out-of-kind on-site. So what they would really need to do is collect roof runoff, put it in a above-ground storage tank so it could gravity feed into the wetland, connect that via a weir, and reestablish a pasture, a functioning pasture with grasses, sedges, rushes, and herbs, and feed it no more than that the existing hydrologic regime would be that's being fed by groundwater. And that's really hard to do because figuring out what a groundwater water regime is really hard without having piezometer wells in. And again, they never bothered to put in piezometer wells, so we don't know what that groundwater hydrologic regime is.
Okay, so it would be difficult to put to do in-kind mitigation on site.
Yes.
Okay, so
not impossible, but difficult.
Okay. And would it, so that if it's difficult to do in kind on the site, would an alternative be to do off-site mitigation or something like that?
Yeah, I have no idea if Silverdale or Kitsap County has a mitigation bank. They didn't a few years ago when I was working on another project there. But, you know, you would want it in the same drainage basin because this is a decent sized meadow wetland, which has associated wildlife species that do perform their life functions within that meadow, you know, moles, voles, different passerine birds, etc. And you'd want to replace that habitat as nearby as possible. But
wetland in the middle of a parking lot difficult to make it more difficult to replace that habitat function?
Yes, it is obviously.
Yeah.
That's not science. I mean, that's not rocket science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in summary, just to summarize all that I've gone over, because some of it got fairly technical. Mm-hmm. They were remanded basically two things, to revisit the wetland in the center and revisit the wetland in the southwest corner. They were supposed to go back and sample as close to my plots as they could to see if they could find the A11 criteria, and I explained why that was problematic and it wasn't good science, that you needed to look at all the wetland indicators. And just because if you disagree, you know, where if you weren't right on top of my plot, if you were just adjacent and the A11 wasn't found, it didn't mean that it wasn't wetland. You needed to look for other indicators. And that in fact, when they did data plots within area that I had previously described as wetland, they did find wetland, even though they said they didn't. And then in the southwest corner, the most southernmost plot is a wetland plot. And along that south edge, there is wetland, but they didn't sample there. They sampled north of it in upland areas. So I contend that had they done those things, they would have found the wetlands that I found. And I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just saying that I don't think that at any point in time they've really made the effort to really try to find out why I found such a big wetland and why they kept finding no wetland. So I think that's the summary. I just we're here yet again, and again the issue has not been resolved because we're still comparing apples and oranges. They're not looking at what I looked at.
And for the same plots, do you still have the data, the coordinates that could be provided to try and get closer to your sample plots?
I'm sure I do on my GPS, yes. I don't erase them.
And another method could be to try and go close or and find similar vegetation, right?
Yeah. At least for areas where it was, there was more stable veg. And to just recognize that, they're looking at the soils the way they are, it's really not serving them in terms of identifying wetlands. And asking themselves the greater question, why would you have vegetation and hydrology present in a very stable landscape setting where the vegetation is not being disturbed and hasn't for decades at this point? Why would you have those two present and not have hydric soils? It makes no sense. So,
And what is, I want you to talk a little bit about kind of the difficulties. So we've discussed the three parameters, right? The three parameters, the vegetation, the
soils
hydrology,
and
the
hydrology.
soils. What are some of the challenges with those different parameters for different types of years or different, what are circumstances when it can be more or less difficult to find those parameters within a wetland that's on a site?
Well, obviously in a wetland that is not the type that has standing water at any point in time, one that's groundwater fed and hydrates the roots of the vegetation from below, during the part of the growing season, excuse me, that where it's dry, it's going to be hard to find hydrology and even secondary features that may be present in other types of situations. Clay-rich soils will crack, if, for example, when they dry out. We don't have clay soils, so that's a secondary feature. Algal layers on the surface. Well, we don't have standing water on this site, so you're not going to have the algal layers. These are all secondary hydrologic indicators. So a lot of the things that you would normally look for are not going to be present in the dry part of the growing season. And even the rhodopsomorphic features are not real obvious. As I said, when the soil is dry, it can be very hard to see. And technically, we're supposed to bring a squirt bottle with us and sit there and hydrate the soil and wait till it becomes fully hydrated. And it can't be too hydrated. You have so then you'd have to squeeze the water out of it. And when you've got to do, and this is all of us, when you've got to do 100 different soil augers or digs of soil pits, you don't have the time to do that. So you're not going to. So finding those rhodopsomorphic features and getting a true soil color can be very problematic when during the dry season. And then obviously for vegetation in the early part of the growing season, if you've got veg that is totally dependent on it being flowering and it doesn't flower till the end of June, July, August, if you're out in March, April, or May, or even early June, not all the stuff may be in flower, or for sedges especially, they're not going to be mature enough to ID. And if you're not good at ID, you have to bring them back to your office, but you're not, then you'd have to do a second site visit. And the clients don't want to pay for that. So, these are all logistical issues that some of it's science, some of it's financial, some of it's political, but there are all kinds of reasons why there are optimal times for doing delineations. For a site like this, kind of September, after the rains have started, is the ideal time. And there's just no way around it. And sometimes we have time to do that, and sometimes we don't. So, but then the hydrology's reestablished itself on a groundwater fed wetland, and The vegetation that's not wetland will have died back, but the wetlands won't. And, you know, this the wetlands, the veg will still have its flowers and you'll be able to do the IDs. And so it's just kind of the optimal time to do it. So.
And that was not done in this case.
Not really, no. I mean, the October visit in 2024 was excellent. And they did find veg in hydrology. And for some reason, they said they didn't find soils. But I just looked at their data sheets and I feel they did find soils. So hydric soils.
And that was the October visit was focused on the, it was focused predominantly on the DP16 data point, right?
The, so the DP16, well, the plots that they added that were in addition to comparing mine, but just trying to, as Mr. Skoll said, was trying to cover the area and be more comprehensive and cover the area that would have been within the wetland between my data point and their wetlands.
And is it your opinion that some of those data points between your data point and their wetland or and their wetlands were in fact wetland data points?
Yes, I think that their DP 25, 27, and 28 were wetland. I think it met all three criteria just from what they documented.
Okay. And could that be a solution for some of the other data points? So some of the other data points where they claim they did not find the hydric soils or that were not wetland, that were not aligned with your points, could additional plots around those, maybe more toward the wetland instead of upland, resolve some of those concerns?
Yes, I think had they done either put in piezometer wells so that they got the hydrology data that could be extrapolated into the dry season, and they did it late enough so that the vegetation was in flower and they could do the proper IDs, and they considered the chromas instead of looking and any other of the indicators that might be present, I think they would have found hydric soils. But they didn't do that, so.
I think we've covered a lot of this. I just want to make sure. One second. Can we touch just a little bit more on the Radeke report and their findings, just to show why you believe that some of those points were wetland points?
With respect to the southwest corner or the central wetland?
Both.
Okay. So again, they didn't include a map. So you have to read in their text as to which data plots correspond, because they named theirs SP, so for sample point, and they labeled them one through whatever. So sample plots. So they're saying that their data plots 15, 17, and 18. 15, 17. Oh, no, sorry. Those are the sound view. And my data plots 2, 4, and 5. And remembering 5 was an upland. So 2 and 4 so 18 would have been out. So 2 and 4 of mine. They say that they didn't meet the hydric criteria soil for A11 because it was, my description was below 12 inches. and not taking into consideration that both the core manual and the field indicator manual specifically discusses that you can go higher or lower than higher in the profile or lower in the profile because of the plowing. So they were using the strict definition. So they said that my soils weren't hydric. And then for the south, let's see, we found soils adjacent to Soundview data plot 16. My data plot 3 did meet the hydric. So they agreed with me on data plot 3. A11, because the soil profile consists, it did meet. So my three, they agreed with my sample plot 3. So, and I don't disagree that A11 is deeper for my data plots 2 and 4. 5 is out, even though I did find the, five was in an upland because the veg didn't meet the criteria for my data plot 5. And it was outside, if you look at my map. That explains why when they did the comparison, they didn't find the A11, but that's all they were tasked to do. And then in the southwest corner, they felt, because I didn't do any data plots in the southwest corner, I just asked them to go look, you know, I said I thought there was wetland there. I found that 14 was a hydric soil and the veg was met, and they didn't find hydrology, but they were out during July, so they wouldn't probably. But they sampled in yet a third location for each of those data plots. And for some reason on when they reviewed the Soundview report for data plot 14, they didn't pick up that it was a wet, the soils were hydric. They okay. just said when they read the report, the data sheet, it said it wasn't a hydric soil. They just took that at face value. They didn't question it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
They also didn't question as to why they didn't go further south right along the site boundary, okay. which is where I said I had found the wetlands.
Okay. Regarding the statement you made about the hydrology, how you only need 2 weeks within a year yeah.
The definition of a wetland is it has to maintain wetland hydrology for a minimum of 2 weeks during the growing season.
Okay. So does that mean that it's common on that it can be difficult to find hydrology for when a site is in fact a wetland?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, especially in meadow conditions. Yeah.
Okay. So it's in some cases it wouldn't be surprising if you had all the wetland vegetation but didn't see the hydrology indicator for a lot of the year.
Correct? Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And then you mentioned that there was a recommendation of putting in a piezometer.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about what that is or what's involved with that, what it would show us, what sort of cost it would add, and how common it is in wetland delineations? Would it be a good practice in this case?
The Corps and the Department of Ecology almost always ask for, in this case, instead, okay, a piezometer, it's usually a deep well, and they can go down tens of feet, and they have little borings in them all around the tube and sensors so that if there's groundwater coming out at different elevations, you can identify at what elevation down the pipe the water is entering into the pipe. We call them piezometers, but in actual fact, the better term would be a shallow groundwater well. And they're usually 24 inches long, because that goes below the top 12 inches. And we're usually required to look at least 24 inches in the soil profile if we can dig down that deep. Sometimes you can't times you can't because it's gravel, shallower, and it's really hard to get past the gravel. But you know, 24 to 36 inches. It's a PVC pipe. You dig a hole. You put it down into the hole. You fill around it with something called bentonite clay. And instead of having, you can either have holes all the way drilled into the pipe all the way up, or you can just let the water that comes up from below go up into the pipe, but it will settle at the same elevation as the groundwater. And then you either have a sensor in that pipe, or you put down a plastic tube, little narrow diameter plastic tube, and some cork dust and a ruler. And the plastic tube is usually delineated with a ruler, and you put it all the way down in the hole, and the cork dust floats up to the top. So when you pull it, you can see how high up that piezometer tube the groundwater has gone. And then you monitor that, and you can digitize it, and there are sensors that will do all that for you, and then send you the data, or you can go out and get a data logger and download the data once a month or whatever. But it can give you a time-lapsed picture of what the groundwater is doing. And in these kinds of meadow situations, these are really, really helpful. In fact, I've almost never seen an agency ask for a shallow groundwater well / piezometer in any other situation other than a meadow type wetland. But it is a common practice for these types of wetlands, because it's when something's groundwater fed and it doesn't have standing water on the surface, and there isn't a flushing of surface water flows, which is a whole type of wetland that we have in the Pacific Northwest, but this is not one of them. This is a groundwater fed meadow. It's really difficult to tell what the hydrology is because it's all happening below ground. So the piezometer wells, especially outside of the rainy season, when the groundwater goes to a lower elevation, is very difficult to see. And again, the definition of wetlands, the national definition of wetlands, is for 2 weeks, a minimum of 2 weeks during the growing season. It's very difficult in these to be able to tell if hydrology is met, especially since in these meadow situations, a lot of the indicators, I showed you the list of indicators for hydric soils. There's 16 maybe or more indicators for primary and secondary indicators for hydrology being present. And again, as I said, cracked soils and clay soils, algal layers, drift lines, up vegetation where it's flooded. But this is not those kinds of situations. So really the only thing that you're going to find is some of the redoxomorphic features, like the models that we talked about, and then oxidized rhizospheres, which is when plants are growing in an area and they exude oxygen into the soil. If the soil is saturated and it has iron dissolved in it, when the iron is exuded at the root, the iron precipitates around the root layer, leaving the roots with a coating of iron oxide or rust. That's another indicator that there's a fluctuating water table, and those kinds of features are present, and I consider them also soil indicators, but they're not an accepted soil indicator. They're considered a hydrology indicator, a secondary characteristic. And I found those in a bunch of my plots in the wetland itself, especially on the sedges, the sedge roots. Not so much in the grass roots, because the grasses lay down a lot of roots each season. And if they're laying down the roots after the soil's dried out, they're not going to have that. It'll only be the roots that persisted over winter that'll have the iron coating around them. So yeah, it's absolutely dependent on when you go out. And that's especially critical on these meadow wetlands. They're really hard to delineate. I mean, there is a reason that we've had so much trouble and disagreement But the fact that the Fish and Wildlife people and the tribes and Diane Hennessy, the three agencies from Diane Hennessy from the Department of Ecology, all felt there was much greater wetland area than was found. And, you know, and I agree with that, indicates to me that, you know, three different groups of people say there's more wetland than the developers' consultants are finding. And nitpicking on the A11 indicator being an inch and a half or 2 inches too low is really going out of your way to try to prove there's not wetland on this property, when in fact there is a lot of wetland on this property in the central area.
All right. Is there anything else that we didn't cover? Anything else that you want to respond to?
No, not. I think we're good.
Yeah, I think we got it. All right. Well, then I have no further questions. Thank you, Dr. Cook.
Okay. I'd have just a couple questions for clarification so that I can better follow the cross-examination. Mm-hmm. So let me share my screen real quick. Dr. Cook, do you see data form for DP16 on the screen yet?
Hold on. I've got to increase the size because it's just a blob. So hold on a second. Yes, I see it.
Okay, yeah, I'm just trying to follow your comments about the faint redox and not really being visible to the human eye. So the greater than 99% there at the depth of 7 to 9 inches, that refers to the color that they're seeing, 10YR2/2, correct?
Yes.
That the soils, more than 99% of the soils meet that color. So the faint redox is that kind of a more generalized characterization of the 10YR2/2?
No, that's the color that they're describing, the 7.5YR33 are the iron oxide redoxes. So those are the ones that the rusty colored things that you're seeing in the soil.
All right. So when you say that they can't really see that faint redox, what are you saying that they might be seeing instead then? That there's no
they're
redox
seeing,
there? That
means that there's no, they're seeing. The fact that they're seeing them means that there's more than, they say there's less than 1%, but the fact that they're seeing them means there's probably 4 or 5%.
Okay. And that would suggest hydric soils.
Yes. And it's within the top 10 inches of the soil, and it's a chroma of 2. So it meets hydric soil criteria.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that's the part I wasn't following. And then another question is kind of interesting how the remand has been interpreted. I can see why. The reference to the A11 in the remand direction was use the interpretation for A11 of this decision, not the other interpretations advocated in this proceeding. It wasn't that you limit your review to the A11. It was just, if you use the A11, use the interpretation of this decision. That was the intent anyway. So the applicants, I think at least they did use, of course, the other two indicators that you're supposed to use in general. But for the hydric soils, for your data points, was anything used other than A11 when you did your analysis?
Oh yeah, color, I found A11, F3, F6, and A11. So you know, usually, If the color's in, you don't really need to look for anything else, although to be more complete, when we're filling out the data sheets, we look at the other indicators. So, I found lots. But in every instance, it was either a chroma of 1 or a chroma of 2 with those redox features.
Okay.
And great. Then the veg and the hydrology obviously were met.
Oh, good. Okay, that really helps. Thank you. All right, well, let's move on to Mr. Schutz. Any cross, assuming there is?
Yes, and I see it's about 11:56. I don't know if you want to take a break now.
I was going to go till 12:30, but 12 is fine. Let's go till 1 o'clock then. We'll see y'all at 1 o'clock.
Thanks.